Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And if you know what's going on in our politics, please write in and tell us, because none of us do. I mean, the most intelligent guy at the table here is Tim Cohen, who's holding his glasses and looking all thoughtful. Tim, what is happening in our politics is there was going to be an NEC meeting today, which would probably have sacked or recalled Jacob Zuma, and it got called off. Why?
Well, first of all, can I say that that's a very big insult to the much more intelligent colleagues on my left hand side here. But anyway,
I'll get to them in a minute.
You know, it's a strange. This is a strange time because at the moment, you know, in the one sense, this is an extremely dramatic time for South African politics. On the other hand, it is so confusing and so stop-start that you know people are actually sort of bored of it. You know, they're bored of. You know, one of the biggest, most dramatic political changes that are in our history. As far as we can tell, there's a negotiation process going on. ANC top six asked Zuma to resign. He refused. He said he didn't see why he should. He said he complied with all of the. You know, the ANC's demands, like the having an inquiry into state capture and changing the ESCOM board and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He doesn't see any reasons why he should go, and he's got a lot of political support. So then he was planning to go ahead and present the SONA report. They've now cancelled that for a week. They've been back to him. So apparently last night...
So sorry, the cancellation of SONA is a one-week postponement.
Just a one-week postponement, yeah. So now last night they went back to them. Cyril and he had a sort of personal one-on-one. This is Cyril and the president had a one-on-one sort of discussion. There is an in-principle agreement to resign pending some negotiations. Now, we don't know what those negotiations are. But anyway, so this is quite a big step forward, right? So so Zuma will probably not deliver SONA. That's the news from the last 24 hours. But then the details of the negotiations, what Zuma has demanded, because he said he can't stand down unless he gets something. He couldn't. One of his arguments yesterday was that he had got no concessions from out of the ANC. So he had two concessions that we think of. One is that he wanted Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma to be the interim president just between now and the election.
This is what the SACP was
correct.
Suggesting.
So and no one likes that idea in the ANC or out. So that's not going to happen. But it's possible that there might be an interim person of some sort, maybe. The second thing is, obviously, he doesn't want to be pursued by the South African police. Mm. So now that puts the ANC in a very difficult position, and that's the problem. What can the ANC do? So within the ANC, there's a feeling that they should not pursue him. All of the court cases against him should stop. But exactly how to stop them? You know, because this is an independent process that's a long way down the road. Anyway, that's the situation. So we think. Possibly, he will resign Monday or Tuesday. The cabinet will change.
He will resign Monday or Tuesday because somebody will have taken the cops off his back
and the judicial system off his back.
That's an impossible decision.
No, it's impossible. They're not going to agree to that exactly, but they'll come to some other. We think that we don't know what the agreement is. It doesn't seem like it's possible to have an agreement, as you point out. But anyway, those details haven't been sorted out yet. But presumably, by Monday or Tuesday, they will some kind of deal. Those details would have been completed. He'll resign. Wednesday, they'll have a new cabinet. Thursday, there will be a SONA.
Sikonathi Mantshantsha, surely it's the case as Sim says, the ANC top six or the top four of the top six said, you got to go. He said, no, I don't. I've done what you told me to do. They then called an NEC meeting. He blinked, made a call and said, give me a week. I need time to put this all together. I mean, these delays are a sign of Cyril's weakness or Zuma's weakness?
Peter, the first thing to acknowledge, these things are moving quite fast. There's a cabinet meeting. And for that reason also, we might want to also tell the listeners that we're recording this before they watch it.
Yeah.
That's the one stuff.
We're not live, folks.
Absolutely. Now, whatever happened shows how weak Cyril Ramaphosa can be, his negotiating skills. He only had one leverage. whatever Jacob Zuma demanded, whatever Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC were prepared to concede, but they only had one leverage: we'll recall you. The NEC meeting that was scheduled and then cancelled for today was the only leverage they had of Jacob Zuma. How do you call that off before the man actually comes out and tells the nation, I am stepping down on Thursday next week, whatever the date is? Now, that's where we are. The rest of the matters about what deal he should get should not even be entertained. Mm. There is a separation agreement with the president in the constitution already. And that agreement says he keeps all his benefits of office unless he's kicked out in a certain way, yeah. And that is through impeachment. He keeps his salary and everything. The law, the justice, all the prosecutions, everything, the executive has got absolutely nothing to do with it. And the ANC dare not make that mistake of making a deal to call off the prosecutors.
They can't do that.
They can't do that. It's illegal, it's unconstitutional, but not only that. It would show exactly the ANC for what it is, the enablers of corruption and no accountability whatsoever.
And if you're Cyril, you wouldn't want to.
If you are Cyril, you can never even begin to enter into that kind of negotiation.
Yeah. Well, except, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, I presume that they called off the NEC meeting because they got the in-principle agreement that he would resign. I mean, that's the only conclusion that you can possibly draw. So they can't call off the prosecution, but they can quietly agree to a pardon if there is a conviction. Couldn't they do that?
After a prosecution and a conviction.
And that would conveniently delay the whole situation until after the election. So sometime in the next term. The question to me is the other thing is about this interim person. You know, if I was Cyril, I wouldn't give that up. But if I'm other people in the party, maybe I would want somebody else.
The other people in the party would want a minority, because the December election did show who the people wanted. So a minority in the NEC would want Nkosazana for whatever reason, and of course that reason is to make sure they still have some control. Mm. But the very act of calling off the NEC meeting that was going to recall Jacob Zuma shows exactly how inexperienced Cyril is in dealing with thugs. And I'm not accusing the president of being a thug, but that's exactly how you deal with a thug. The only leverage you have, you keep that on and say, listen, it's up to you. You decide whenever you want to resign, but we are meeting tomorrow and we are making a decision about your future.
Yeah.
I don't know. I cut it. Cyril Ramaphosa a little bit more slack here. I mean, his concern is he doesn't want to mobilize the Zuma and Nkosazana Zuma sort of faction within the so he has to be quite gentle in his approach here. Otherwise, if he does it brutally, then he will never get that grouping under control. So it's possible you're right. I mean, that he has to be much more decisive than he
absolutely
is.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it's a. If he can do it by negotiation, I think that's his preferred option.
Tim,
so he's going to try that way first.
He who wants to be followed must be willing to command.
Yes.
If Cyril Ramaphosa wants to gain control of the ANC, they have already skipped all the rats have already skipped the sinking ship that is Jacob Zuma. They are all behind Cyril. It's for him to take the opportunity now and lead.
It really is. It really is. I think it's totally weird. But there is a sense in which we are probably all wanting things to happen too quickly. You know, it took 9 months for them to get rid of Thabo Mbeki when the two centers of power arose in the ANC. We're not even 2 months down the road yet.
I think the context is very different. Yeah. And I think Cyril is being treated globally and locally as the president in waiting. And I suppose this whole drama shows just how untenable this two centers of power thing is, as the ANC would call
it. Really
they told Jacob Zuma he must change the Eskom board, he must institute the state capture inquiry, which he's only half done. which is, yeah. and they change it for him, which is half done, not even fully done. But you can't sort of run a country like that. And there is now a whole lot of expectations that have been raised. And I would imagine that the sort of happier environment is filtering through, and the prospect of better economic growth, etc., is filtering through even to Cyril's detractors, that if you don't get this guy in quite soon and let him call the shots, for example, boot out the mining minister, and we'll talk about the mining in Durban just now, that the momentum will be lost, and that you can't really afford to do that at this point. So the environment is very different to what it was when Thabo Mbeki was recalled.
Yes, but I mean, just one thing, another thing to note, you know, sort of talking about the process going too slowly and all that sort of stuff. The, I mean, you know, what's happened this week has been really dramatic for so it does indicate that it's happening, it is happening, you know, and you know, I think if you look at how the RAND has responded to all of this, it's, you know, in the context of, you know, turmoil in markets around, it's actually been improving. So, you know, the market for it, at least, for whatever that is worth, is happy to see the process, is happy to see the process unfolding in the way it is.
It's almost a binary kind of situation. It's kind of for markets, and I think for even in terms of things like the budget, it's kind of, is growth going this way or is growth going that way? And I think a huge disappointment, like for certainly in Nkosazana presidency for the next year, would be really, really bad at this point.
If you could show me a business that is being run like the ANC is running itself and the country, and then honestly, we wouldn't. I just don't know where we would be. What we need here is a decision, and a decision, and we need it now.
And is there, does the is there any prospect of an early election? I mean, if you were, if you're looking, if Cyril is able to sort this out, the opposition parties are not sorting themselves out, and are, you know, not necessarily on the back foot or anything like that. But I mean, you know, they're not, they're certainly not on, there's no front foot there with Zuma out of the way. And Cyril beginning to sort out problems and confidence returning. Why would you not bring the election forward to
but
September?
Why would you? Because you if Cyril can be in place as the country's president, put a decent new cabinet in place, start addressing some of the issues, they can go into the next election actually having redeemed themselves, and possibly even, and if they can get the growth rate up and start to get the economy to look like something and deliver some stuff. Even some stuff.
Presumably, one of the things
where the opposition parties in disarray. You've got 18 months in which to get back a sort of reasonably clear majority. I would have thought that would be.
Is there one killer thing that Cyril could do that would, you know, guarantee him political sort of success going forward into an election? I just thought of it. I mean, it's getting the Guptas back here under arrest and in jail. If he could do that, I mean, and he'd probably got the clout, you know, when you think about it. I mean, Cyril's standing in the world among security services and international finance. I mean, everybody knows where the Guptas are, whether they're in Delhi or in Dubai. We just need a set of charges against them. And Interpol puts out a red notice against them, and they are brought back to South Africa in handcuffs.
That again.
I mean, it'd be like you know, Obama killing Osama bin Laden. I mean, it won him another election.
That again, constitutionally speaking, is beyond his own doing. What he can do and do immediately: slash that cabinet and leave 20 ministers in, competent, clever people with a track record of success.
You're absolutely right. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you and welcome back. One of the big events of the beginning of any year in South Africa, besides SONA and the opening of Parliament and the President's address and the budget, is the mining in Durban, from which Hilary Joffe, fortunately, has just returned full of news and insights. And Hilary, there was a different mood at the mining in Durban this year, even though it was opened by arguably the worst mining minister we've ever had in this country.
Well, apparently so. Attendance was up.
Yeah.
Apparently more investors attended, global investors, than had attended last year. Mm-hmm. There was certainly a sense that the industry was going to take off again any moment. And the politics of it were kind of surreal, reflecting the surreal times we're in. So it is absolutely a precedent that the mining minister, the mineral resources minister, opens the Indaba, which he did. And he then proceeded to give a question and answer session in which he said his door was open, he wanted to attract investment. It was kind of like parallel reality.
Yeah.
However, the day before the mining Indaba starts, there's always a closed interministerial session with the mining minister and the chief execs and investors. Mm. That session, Jeff Khadebe arrived, the minister in the presidency. He arrived with a prepared speech, which he proceeded to deliver, and to dominate the occasion. And
was
the message...
Was Mosabenzi Zwane there?
He was there, and apparently he said a few words, but Jeff Khadebe very much took over. And the message that investors and mining companies seem to read off this was the new people, oddly, since Jeff Khadebe is the longest-serving cabinet minister, I think, moving in and saying, don't worry about this guy. Mm. We're onto it. He can say whatever he wants, but he's sort of a dead man walking, as one mining person said. So that was the sort of odd politics behind it. And Jeff Khadebe was in fact supposed to address a panel, which was a first for the mining Indaba, and he was called back to Pretoria for ANC meetings.
For yet another change of direction.
For yet another change of direction. But I think that was the politics of the Indaba, and there definitely seemed to be a sense that things were about to change, and really to change the huge signal that the industry needs and that investors need is for this chart, for the minister to go, this minister's wanted to go, and for the charter, Zwane's charter, to be withdrawn. And that is what everyone is waiting for.
Is that, Sekonati, is that a reasonable thing to expect?
First, I don't believe Museveni Zwane would honestly tell people that his door is open.
He honestly did.
It's never open. And now he probably even put a burglar bar there because the hawks at any time can budge in. Should the mining charter be withdrawn? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The reason that court case has not gone ahead is actually because he wouldn't want it to be tested in court, because patently it will not master the constitutional requirements.
Yeah.
And anyway, who are the people that should be investing in this mining industry? Is it the government or is it the miners that actually don't want it? You go ahead and make that kind of proclamation without so much as an input from the people who actually have the capital to invest, and you have 40% unemployment. Forget the official rate. 40% real unemployment rate in this country, and you go ahead and you throw a book at the people who actually have the money, and you don't even look in their direction.
But
that charter has to go.
It's one thing to worry about investment in mining, but I know that you have had an argument on social media this week, and I haven't been able to go through the Financial Mail this morning yet, over the decision by the PIC to lend Eskom 5 billion rand. What's wrong with that? I mean, Eskom needs the money, otherwise the lights go out. They've got to pay their staff.
Oh.
How can, you know, where would they get the money from otherwise?
That's the thing. Now the PIC...
It's a bridging loan. It's a bridging loan.
The PIC has now been reduced to a mashonisa. The people out there will know what a mashonisa is.
Yeah.
A loan shark. That guy that lends you 1,000 rands until payday and then comes and claims 1,000 rands plus 50%.
Yeah.
That's what this loan is. Because Eskom has got absolutely no money. What is wrong with the PIC doing that? Let's just take a step back. On 27th September 2017, Malusi Gigaba calls a press briefing at the National Treasury and says, in response to my question and to my stories, that they were hounding out Daniel Machila, the chief executive.
Yeah.
He says, there's no one who is going to touch the PIC money. That money is not going to be used to bail out Eskom, as I had pointed out in September and August. Eskom, South African Airways, Daniel. No one is going to touch the PIC's money. Mm. That's absolutely not true. Fast forward 4 months later, the PIC is is loaning $5 billion.
$5 billion can't, fifth or $5 billion at usury rates can't be a bailout for Eskom. I mean, clearly there was a short-term, absolute short-term crisis there. What would you have done? How would you have done it?
Why is that now the responsibility of the beneficiaries of the government employees' pension fund? Uh-huh.
So where would they have got the money? Eskom's
money has been stolen. Yeah. Let's start there. Yeah. Eskom's money has been stolen by the people appointed by Malusi Kigaba into Eskom and others after him. Malusi Kigaba goes and destabilizes the management at Eskom South African Airways, Daniel. Yeah. When he leaves, all of them collapse under the weight of corruption that he facilitated.
Yeah.
He goes to the PIC, does exactly the same, destabilizes management by finding reasons to suspend and fire Daniel Machila so that they can get their hands on the 2 trillion rand. And then he says, we're not going to touch the money.
Sure.
The issue here is the credibility of the finance minister. It's only 4 months.
But Sikonathi, surely he would not have done that without going to Cyril Ramaphosa first and saying, listen, Eskom can't pay its salaries. They need $5 billion. The only place that I can get it without going to a bank or an institution or the World Bank, only place I can go is to the PIC.
Peter, can I just come in here? That's not the only place. The banks are willing to come in now that the new board is in place and the new interim chief executive is in place. The banks wanted the comfort, as I understand it, of somebody from government side coming in, hence the PIC. But my worry, as Sikonathi's is that, you know, the PIC is this like treasure chest which everyone wants to raid, which is really money which belongs to government employees.
It's a short term loan, though.
It's a 1 month loan. It is a 1 month loan, and you could argue that it's kind of okay, but as long as I think one would be very worried if this were to set a precedent. And truly, I don't. If the banks were willing to lend, and if Eskom truly had a case to make, then I'm not sure why everybody couldn't just, you know, do it.
But then, you know, the obvious other alternative is for taxpayers to pay for it. You know, so essentially what happened here is that Malusi Garba had a choice between using the PIC or using taxpayers' money, and he's used, pensioners' money, which I think is outrageous. You know, why should you, even on a month basis, if it is really only a month, if they really only need the money for a month, then surely taxpayers should come forward. They shouldn't be putting, you know, pensioners' money at risk. This is not what the PIC does. The PIC doesn't invest in, doesn't loan, you know, organizations money for, you know, on a sort of short-term
basis. What is the consequence of this now?
So clearly there was something about the budget. They didn't want the budget to look worse than it is going to look anyway. So Ms. Lucy Gigaba said, I can't give you the money now. I can't give it to you, you know, just before we go ahead with the budget. So they looked for an option. And the obvious option is the PIC. And he managed to, you know, twist their arm to dish out the cash.
I want to add this thing. Mm. I've got absolute confidence in the current leadership of Eskom, in Phakamani Hadebe, in the board, the current board. I've got absolute confidence. The issue here is the principle, one, the precedent that you are setting. And did the trustees of the government employees pension fund agree to this? Yeah. Do they know what's going on with the money? And if you can bail out now Eskom with, yes, 5 billion rand, which is nothing to the PIC, what's going to stop you from bailing out South African Airways? We cannot pay salaries. What's going to stop you from dipping into that 2 trillion rand again to bail out Denel, which cannot pay salaries? And all of this, by the way, all of these companies are collapsing under the weight of the corruption that Malusi Kigaba facilitated. He's doing exactly the same at the PIC. Mark you well my words. The other issue here is, where is Eskom going to get 5 billion rand again in 28 days to pay back these five? What they are going to do, they are going to go borrow 20 billion rand from four banks, take immediately 5 billion rand and pay the PIC. Eskom is a risk that they should be charging them like.
Can I just ask you a question then? I mean, if it's so existential, now, What do you do with Eskom in the next 2 months? What do you do? What do you do? How do you...
You start cutting the cost, you start delaying the capex, you start looking at closing, literally closing down power stations.
Finish.
Those are the decisions they have to make. Otherwise, they're going to be bad.
All of that stuff costs money too. It costs money.
It does cost money in the short term, but the problem with Eskom is this kind of cash flow leaching, and you've got to stop it in the long term. Otherwise, it's going to be back with a begging bowl every 2 minutes.
And I have said on the record, and I'll say it again, by my own calculations, Eskom needs at least 50 billion rand cash bailout. And it's going to get that from the government, nowhere else.
I don't think it should be bailed out. At this point, it's borrowing to pay the interest on the debt.
It should not be bailed out, but it will be bailed out. It's 40% overstaffed. It needs to get rid of the people. But the start is you get rid of that debt on the balance sheet right now so that the company can be able to fund itself. All of these other things happen after an immediate cash injection to take care of that immediate problem. In this first week of Feb, it has to pay 10 billion rand in coupons. By the 1st of March, it has to pay another 10 billion rand. It's got how much in the bank other than the 5 billion rand? It's got zero.
Surely the people, Tim, who've done this to Eskom, I mean, Eskom was a hugely successful public utility. Won awards. Mm. Not even, you know, while ANC, since the dawn of democracy even. Surely the people who've done this to Eskom should be in prison.
Yeah, I mean, you can't imprison people for making bad business decisions. I mean, you know, everybody, otherwise, you know, half of the JSE would be in jail. You can investigate the fraud, and there's been lots. You know, I mean, just by the way, you know, the Eskom is the organization that gave 600 million rand to the Guptas to buy coal from a mine that the Guptas didn't even own yet. You know, that's what happened. You know, my feeling just about the PIC thing. If I was the PIC, I would say, okay, let's do this differently. We will give you money, but we want Kusile. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't take Kusile.
But at least you'd have an asset out of it. I'd say here's 50 billion rand. All your problems are over. Thanks. We'll take some
liabilities with that asset. You know, before Kusile was built, Eskom went to, I think it was 40 or 50 global potential funders, and none of them would fund it.
Yes, but now it's like it's sort of 20% built or something. So now we're in the rollout phase. So I think a good financier would come up with a price.
Well, let's hope we find one soon because we're in trouble otherwise. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again this week.